Ladies and gentlemen, it's all about voice. It's all about voice.
Welcome, everyone. Good to see you. It's still January. It's still allowed to wish you a happy new year. I would say, at least in Germany, we do so. We are super happy to see you again, to have you again at our very first event in 2021. We are about to start the third event in our event series from the All About Voice Club. And we're looking back on two very successful events in November and December last year with more than 300 participants from more than 25 countries. We're so happy seeing so many of you joining us and supporting the club, the one and only club actually to be involved into. 2021 will also kick off with a monthly, or at least somehow monthly, bi-monthly event series. We want to do 10 to 12 events in this year. And we started last year with the virtual meetup format. And I already explained to you that All About Voice is a club is more than just the meetups. We are trying new formats as well, and today is the kickoff for the Meet the Expert format. And you will listen to a live interview we are going to start in a few moments, where we have an industry expert in the voice ecosystem landscape, and we will have an in-depth conversation with him today, and you are more than welcome to ask your questions to our guest today, to us. And I've already seen that there are many questions popping up already and coming in, so we are collecting all of them and we try to answer them along way the discussion or at the very end in our Q&A. Okay, Dominik, you also with me?
Yes, welcome everybody. It's great to see you again in this year and to have a new event coming up today. The Meet the Expert is a first. We haven't done this before. We are giving our best not to mess it up, to answer all your questions, to have a good conversation with everybody and see where everything is driving us to. This event format is a first. We also have another first here today to present. We have developed our own very first event Alexa skill. So you can listen to this event not only, or watch this event not only on your laptop or PC, you can also listen on your smart speaker to this conversation. This format is perfect for it because it's a laid back. There are no presentations, there are no slides to watch, so you can all you can focus on the spoken word. So, Tim, you showed to us. Grab your favorite smart speaker from Alexa. Hopefully, I activated all of them, and then you can easily just say, "Alexa, open AAV Club," and you get this interview streamed directly to your smart speaker. From the internet, so you can listen to the conversation without distraction and try to use your smart speaker. Listening to audio is one of the primary use cases of smart speakers, and that's why we tried to develop the skill and see where this is moving us. So everybody, give
please
it a try.
Please don't fall asleep while you're on the couch or in your bedroom or somewhere else. Yeah.
So please give it a try. We have posted the quick link to it in the chat, where it will pop up directly on your screen and can be activated and used. We love to hear your feedback, what you think about it. Any there's always, if you launch a product, there's always room for improvement. So let us know what we can change or any ideas that we can develop into the skill. We are really, really eager to try everything out and give our best to improve. So please try out our Alexa skill, open AAV club to Alexa. And this event and this event series wouldn't be possible without our sponsors. As in 2020 and the years before, we have Media Netzwerk Bayern as our primary sponsor for this event. They've partnered up with us again. And we both, Media Netzwerk Bayern and we from All About Voice, have a common... We of course have a common goal to bring together individuals and companies in the field of voice to work together to exchange knowledge and to foster a community that is open to innovation and new developments in the field of voice. So thank you very much for all your long-standing support, Media Netzwerk Bayern. But now everybody's eager to see what's going on with our events. Let's get things started. Let's jump into our first ever Meet the Expert with our dear Brett Kinsella. Please welcome Brett on stage with us. Oh, yeah. Big applause for you, Brett. Thank you for Hello. Joining us. Hello. Welcome on stage. Brett, I think everybody knows what you're doing. Everybody reads your tweets. Every time I go onto the socials, either I open my Twitter account, I open my LinkedIn profile, I browse through the blogs, I see your name and your expertise coming up, commenting on everything related to voice, all news about voice. I don't know how you're doing it. I think your day has more than 24 hours. At least you have more hours awake than I do. Please give us a short intro what you're doing for people who haven't came across you, which I don't think there are, but maybe there are some.
Sure, I'm sure there are many, but thank you very much, Dominic and Tim, for inviting me to be here today. I'm very excited to be talking to everybody here. I was very sad that I wasn't able to join you in Munich this year. It was one of the things on my calendar to come to the AAV conference, but... Okay, 6 months later, we're doing this. This is fun as well, and I'm looking forward to some of the interaction with the questions at the end. I assume there are a number of people here who don't actually know who we are, so I'll just say very briefly, voicebot.ai is really the central resource for analysis, research, data, of course, and news around the voice AI industry. We cover it very broadly. We do everything from transcription to big platform voice assistants to even a lot more on chat and virtual humans today, because those are all overlapping. And we've been around for over 4 years now. And so we're clearly the largest in the space. And I think one of the big things that I tell people about is if you're watching something like this, there's a couple things to keep in mind. You can go to our news site every day. We sort of collate, curate, and comment on the news of the day. So that'll keep you up to speed. So that's pretty straightforward. We have these in-depth interviews with people like Dominic, who was just on a couple weeks ago, on the podcast. And so for people who are watching this who really want the story behind the story for the founders and what's going on, I really recommend VoiceBot Podcast. And then Voice Insider Newsletter is another thing that we do, which is really just for industry people. Like it's about weekly, 3 to 4 times a month, we come out with something and we go in depth on things that you don't find in the news. And so those are some things that I think are really interesting to folks. And then of course, like if you just go to our website, if you want data, we've got lots of charts. So that's what we do. We're really proud of what we've been able to do. It's not just me. Eric Schwartz, Andrew Herndon, on the team, other people who have contributed to this over the years as well. Very excited about all that they've done. But our goal is really to help people stay informed, develop a broader understanding, and make better decisions around what they're doing with voice and AI.
So I'm pleased to hear that it's not only you publishing all this content and contributing this. It feels good to me.
I don't have time anymore because of Clubhouse.
Yeah. I assume so. So just to give you a short intro of what we are doing today, this is going to be an interview format. We're going to do 60 minutes starting 5 minutes ago, and we will touch about three topics in these 60 minutes. We will have a short look back into the past year of Voice. Then we will have a short or mid-length status quo where we are standing with Voice, and then there will be a outlook in the future where all of us, three of us, will imagine the bright future of Voice that's coming up in the next year, hopefully, or years to come. So let's start off with a kind of a short wrap-up that about the past year. The pandemic had us all in grip. People were at home, smart speaker usage rose over the top because people were at home using their devices. We had great expectations for the last year before the year started with monetization and discovery that some issues that should be solved by the platforms. The pandemic came, we had great usage. Some projects came to a stop, others developed quite well. So what is your perspective or your insight in the last year? Maybe give us some insights that you found interesting or something you stumbled upon in 2020.
Brett. Yeah, so I don't know that I'll be saying anything that hasn't been said before here, but I will say something that is unique first. And I would say that the industry was going through a transition before the pandemic hit. And I always look at the different phases of development and the maturity of the industry, and they go through natural cycles. And I was already seeing certain segments rise in voice, and some segments sort of ebb or plateau a little bit in terms of what was going on. So that was already happening. And to a certain extent, some of those care areas, the pandemic masked the changes, and in other areas, it accelerated those changes. So over the past year, the first thing I'll say, obviously, voice and healthcare became a very big thing. So rapid deployment of chatbots, to a lesser extent, voice assistants in the healthcare system, but certainly was there. And a really good example is I had Joe Petros, the head of R&D and the chief technology officer at Nuance, which, if you're not familiar with Nuance, Nuance has been the giant in voice technology for 2.5 decades. Public company, I think they're a $5 billion market cap. I think it's $2 billion a year in revenue, something like that. And so Joe was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things he said was he was talking to the head of a large hospital system who had, I think, before the pandemic, about 1,500 telehealth visits across the entire health system per month. 6 weeks later, they had 200,000 in a month. So now you think about this. So everyone says, okay, so we need Zoom or we need one of these other streaming services in order to enable that. Okay, sure. Have you ever thought about the infrastructure around supporting something like that? Scheduling, answering questions, right? Being able to rescheduling, doing follow-up, all these other types of things. And they did not have the infrastructure to support that in terms of just raw people power to do this because everything was set up for in-person visits. The second thing that happened is the people that they did have that could handle this were all moved to home. And so they then didn't have all the resources that they had at the office, and they didn't have an easy way to load balance and all these other things. So they had to create all these things. So one thing they did is they changed their systems that they were already using. Another is they started to expand their use of digital agents, whether they be chatbots or voice assistants, more sophisticated IVR maybe, but you know, hopefully natural language processing, which we saw. And if you look at someone like Orbita, you know, I remember talking to Orbita, Natrella over there, within a month after the sort of the global lockdown started happening, the stay-at-home policies, and things that were going to be pilots all of a sudden were production projects. The people, things that had been stalled for 6-8 months and back and forth, all of a sudden were getting approved in a week. So if we look at healthcare, there's a really significant driver there. And just to be able to manage this, and this is what crises do, right? They say, geez, you know, the old system doesn't work. What can I do? And thankfully, there was something that was ready made there in voice technology and voice assistants. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I think it woke up governments, because governments actually had a lot of inbound requests that they hadn't had in the past, and they're trying to figure out how to do this. They're publishing to the website. Is that good enough? So there were a few governments who started to move in this direction. And then the other thing that I think is important to note, aside from the whole smart speaker side, is there was an increase in consumption of media in general. And media search using voice is a superior user experience, very significantly better. The second thing, though, is maybe on the downside, is a lot of the more sophisticated implementations slowed. And so these are the ones where people were going to organizations, typically going to be adding a voice assistant to their product or their mobile app. So some of those did launch last year. So you think about like U.S. Bank here in the U.S., a big bank put out a new voice assistant in August. But things like MarsBot, for example, was going to come out in the spring, but they delayed it until the fall. And, you know, they're even questioning whether they should bring it out in the fall, because do people care? But there's other people with custom assistant programs who basically took a slower path because they didn't have budget, they didn't have time. And we see this with some of our survey data of marketers that I've just been looking at as well. So those are some of the things. So it's sort of a mixed bag. And I'd say on the smart speaker front, media for sure and gaming were the ones that tended to do best. The other one was cooking and recipes. And then the others, some of them did okay, but we didn't really see like broad adoption of skills on the platforms. Yeah, I think that the action was really elsewhere other than gaming and media.
But this is, I think, a really interesting aspect. You touched a lot on voice, not on smart speakers, but on custom assistants, implementations in IVRs, and corporate use cases. Not that many consumer cases where, I mean, we as an agency saw a lot of rise in consumption. So this is a little bit a different picture. So I don't know, maybe Tim, you could sum up what we have experienced in the last year from an agency perspective on in this with this change in the ecosystem or all this like kind of pandemic acceleration of projects.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tim. Do you want to say something?
What I think it's really interesting, just to touch that note that you just mentioned in one sentence, is that large sized companies are willing to leave their comfort zone if they have to, and making things possible way faster than they used to had to in maybe years ago or so. And that's what I think is super interesting, and we have experienced more or less the same over the last year. We thought, okay, when the pandemic kicked in, how will this impact our business? Of course, we are running a business, a serious business in voice, and we've seen that there has been a really short dip only. Other businesses have taken away more impact and almost having had to give up their businesses. And we had like a period of maybe 4 to 6 weeks where we had that freezing moment. Okay, what's next? And looking at the numbers, we've seen that a raise of 20-30% in average from all the 50 to 60 projects we are managing for our clients, and the pace in general, like throwing out skills and new projects, has slowed down. Yes, that's a fact. But we're seeing a raise in the adoption, in the consumption. People are they have to stay at home right now, but we see that they are having fun and are using actually their smart speakers and to interact with our skills and other skills as well, or actions or apps, voice UX in general. That's what we faced last year is really interesting. It's still moving on, but more on the strategic level, and projects take longer than before because we invest more time into UX design and taking really care of all these edge cases and stuff. Is this the same that you observed in other markets?
Yeah, I think that's similar to what I was referring to, in that there's not a lot of projects that actually were canceled that I'm aware of. They just tended to elongate. And I have a follow-up with you, because I think there's this other thing that happened is objectives changed. And so what someone had as an objective for their voice project in January suddenly looked very different in July. But maybe you've seen something different. So did your clients come back to their projects and start to think, oh, we need to change the feature set. We need to think about this differently. We need to upgrade the performance, because we're going to look at this not as a test, as production. Were there these types of considerations going on?
So I'd say in relation to this, I'd say, but I'm not sure if this started just at the beginning of the year. I see that lots of projects are not driven by marketing or innovation budgets anymore. They're coming more or less out of the corporate strategy budget. So people really understood voice, and it's not their goal anymore to push out a voice application within the next, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks, and then publish a press release. We are on the voice train,
right?
And we are also going down this road. They are more thinking strategically: how can we integrate into our core business and contribute to business value? And how can voice be used in terms of generating revenues or driving costs down, and more, this more strategic approach. And I think that happened early in the year and was accelerated by the crisis, because then people had to really think about their strategy and their core values, and does this project contribute to their strategy and their core value? If not, then just cancel it or change the perspective and change the aim of the project, and then move on. And I think that's why we saw a lot of re-elevation of running projects, and that ended sometimes in changing the perspective, ending the project, or even enlarging the project, putting more budget on it because we need it faster than we thought, because this is really contributing to our business success and we want to have it out very fast. And this is not a marketing or innovation mm-hmm. budget. This is really a strategic budget that went into it. Which is a good thing, I think, for the whole ecosystem to think about voice strategically, not in a kind of a reactive way, and push things out fast and talk loud about it. It's better put them out slow and whisper the story, but it's a good story at least.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing obviously that was a big story last year was call centers, customer contact centers, which are cost centers. Right. So they are very budget conscious. And so they tend to be very deliberate and slow about their adoption of new technology. They have a system in place. They don't want to break it. They don't have a lot of extra money. They don't want to do a wholesale replacement. But what happened when COVID changed, like all of their metrics were upended. A lot of their infrastructure was not available in the way they'd had in the past. And so like healthcare, they had a real crisis on their hands. And that made them open to looking at alternatives that they probably would have gotten to in 2023 or 2024. But because they had this opportunity, they seized on it. Now, I think there's two things that happened. One is they were solving problems. I always think of this idea of pain as being the biggest motivator. Like I have a pain organizationally. It's keeping me working on weekends when I'd rather not, you know, all these other things to solve problems. So what can I do as a corporate executive to solve that problem? And so there was part of that, but there was also this other thing that was going on, which always goes on in big organizations. If I'm a cost center and I have very limited budget or budget increases each year, and I can't get the things that I really want to do through, I see this crisis and say, oh, because of this crisis, I must have this, you know, $5 million budget or this $10 million budget that you've been denying me for 3 years. I know you said it could come in 2022 for implementation in 2023, but we have to do it now. It's essential. And all of a sudden, the CEO offices, the CFO offices were saying, okay, now it's justified. Go ahead and do that. And that's one of the reasons why we saw some of the companies in the voice AI space that are so focused on the contact center and customer support actually break through, go from POC to production, go from idea to POC, POC being proof of concept or, you know, prototype. And we saw many of the agencies who were working previously on marketing all of a sudden participating in RFPs and some winning work, certainly responding to requests from their customers to actually help out in customer support when previously they'd been working more in the consumer engagement or marketing side.
So, but I think I can only like underline this, what we are experiencing here in the German or European ecosystem from agency side, we are seeing, I think the mindset of agencies that are working in voice has been broadened over the past year. So they are not looking into smart speakers only anymore. They might look into other applications of voice, IVRs. They even might go into chatbots and see how they can contribute. All this WhatsApp messengers are going on. And I think this is contributing to all these service inquiries that can be answered by automatic systems instead of human people. I think there is a number I've heard, average call on a call center answered by a human person is about, I think, $5 or $10 per call. So this is a major cost driver if you're having hundreds or thousands of calls every day, and you like to drive this down and with an assistant and now the advanced NLU that is provided to these IVR systems, you can do this, and I think it can be sufficiently done. In some cases, hand it over to an agent, a manual or human agent, but most of the cases can be handled by an automatic system, which is the status quo at the moment.
Would you agree that like the system of or the technology of Alexa was an eye opener and door opener for all these implications in other markets and technologies, so that like not only users at home may want to use this technology and maybe are talking to their computers sometimes in the future, but also that companies seen, okay, that's an interesting technology, and how can this be used in other systems or infrastructures?
Okay, so it's a good question. It's sort of like a softball for me, if you know that terminology, like an easy one. So I think it was 2 years ago next week, I wrote an article in Voice Insider. So Voice Insider is that custom newsletter for the industry people, that Alexa and Google Assistant will be known as the assistants that launched 1,000 assistants. And I'll stand here and say that I was wrong. It's probably a million, not 1,000. And it's precisely what you said. And what I was seeing was that what Alexa and Google Assistant were demonstrating to everyone else was how valuable it was to have your own assistant, where you control the data, you control the user experience, you can enhance the user experience for services you're already providing. And people were seeing Alexa and Google not just as like a new platform that they could participate in, but they were seeing it as a strategic move by Amazon and Google that was adding value to what they provided to their consumer interaction. And it invariably was going to lead them to say, well, what if I could do that? Now, very often when big tech does something, you say, oh, it's out of reach. I can't do that. I don't have that budget. Even if I'm a big company, nobody's going to give me 1,000 people to work on something. But what happened in the interim, and really what I was counting on when I wrote that article 2 years ago, was not just that people would recognize the value of having an assistant, but the cost of deploying it was very low, was going to go down significantly. So if you think about one of the companies in the US that I track, built a custom assistant for themselves, and they spent about $60 million over 2 years to do that. And they used some existing components from some players out there, and they built some things themselves, but it was a very large operation. Now, if you look at the scale of the audience that they were serving, it actually is not that expensive, right? And you know, anybody who's worked in large-scale enterprise software will understand that $60 million over 2 years, it sounds like a lot, but sometimes it's not, you know, depending on how you're using, you know, how it's actually being used in the enterprise. But if you look at that same thing that was built a couple of years ago, I believe that you could build that for less than $10 million today, and maybe less than $3 million in another 2 years. So, you know, a lot of the things that they had to create themselves are now already available in pre-built libraries. And so those two things came together. And I think what we're seeing is, like, you've got, you know, you guys are starting to see this, other people that I've had on the podcast. We did a series of, I think, 15 different interviews last year just on custom assistance. You know, every week I had a new person, different angle on this. It's something that people think is very accessible now for most enterprises deploy, depending on what their scope is, right? And they also see the value in it. And so I just see strong interest, and I'm actually seeing projects go out along these lines.
So what is your perspective on Alexa opening up as a custom assistant, which they have announced, I think, 2 weeks ago or last week?
Yeah, so I think it's, well, I think, as I said at the time, that I wasn't surprised that it happened, but I was surprised it happened now. I also understand why it happened now. My belief is that it's actually not ready for many people to use, and you can just look at the way they rolled it out and limited access and no documentation, all these other types of things right now is sort of justification for that. But it's largely a function of the strategy behind Alexa Auto. And it's actually managed under the Alexa Auto team. So a lot of people don't know that. So there you go. There's some news we broke here.
Okay.
That's the type of thing you find out in Voice Insider, like, you know, something you probably don't know. So this idea of a custom assistant is essential to be competitive and providing a voice assistant for automotive makers, because they basically said, hey, I have a lot of options out there today where I can have a custom assistant. I can control the data, control the user experience. I can make something different than my nearest competitor. And so I'm just going to take those unless you offer it as well. I like this idea that you provide this broader ecosystem and maybe you offer it for free, although, you know, there's other things that maybe will show up in Voice Insider about how they actually charge for this, which is, I think, a little known secret. But, you know, the fact is they had to roll that out now because they're saying, hey, people who are making decisions about their voice assistant in their car 2 years from now are saying, well, if you can't have a custom wake word or we can't really customize it the way we want, we're not going to consider you. And then it's easy for them to go to Fiat Chrysler, which was their first announced customer for it, say, you know what? Yes, we have this. We've got some components for it. We'll build it together. By the time you actually go to market, it'll be all done. I don't have special inside knowledge about that, but I have enough information that would suggest that that's probably where they are right now. And then Dave Lamp, who, you know, reports directly to Bezos and oversees this whole stack that includes Alexa, you know, he talked about on CNBC in an interview that this was going to be for everybody. It's not just for automotive, which is interesting because the press release was much more about automotive, although they did say other people could use it. And I believe that that's a really big opportunity for them. And I actually believe that the bigger opportunity for them is not automotive, because I think they have other structural issues that they're going to face in that space that that are going to be difficult. But I think it's actually bigger for them in areas like mobile apps, where there's many, many mobile apps. And a lot of the mobile app providers are just going to be looking to add the convenience to users. Mm. Voice and be able to extend that into an Alexa ecosystem with handoffs and those types of things actually could be a good trade-off for them. They're not going to be as concerned about owning every aspect of the voice user experience because they already have a really intricate touch user experience, and that's going to be the primary one. And if they can get something cheaper, faster, and more familiar for their users by using Alexa, I think that could be a really big thing. Now, the question for them is what the timing will be and how much emphasis Amazon will place on it. If, you know, if it's available sometime in the next year, I think they could do really well. If it's not available to, like, mobile app producers for 2 years, my guess is that there's so many other options emerging right now that one of those or two of those will take off, and it'll be harder for Alexa to really be a strong option.
I think I'm acting today as the timekeeper, and I'm having a look on the questions also from the audience. The very first one during our interview was, where do I get this voicebot jacket, this voicebot swag from? Martin Fitzgerald asked this from the Netherlands. Maybe you could post something on that. But you just somehow answered a question from another Dutch friend from us, Jeroen, who asked if voice will go more on the smartphone dimension or app dimension in 2021. And you just, like, did a point on that, that it will be more important that there will be voice layers inside of mobile apps as well. Maybe you can answer another question from Julia, who just asked which industries will potentially benefit from this in the near future. Maybe for whom is interesting to add a voice layer to their smartphone app? For everyone or okay. not?
Yeah. So one thing I'll say is I believe there will be many more examples of voice UI, voice assistants, and mobile apps this year. But I actually am looking at next year as being the big year when that ramps up significantly. We would be able to start to see the really fast growth. So there's some reasons for that, which I can break down. But if I go to Julia's question about which industries, certainly media. I think from a media standpoint, because media search is difficult with text and it's complex, and there's a lot of benefit in being able to bundle different types of media together and search results or to go get right to what you want very quickly, that any of the media apps are going to have it. And this actually includes social media, which I think is not obvious to people because it's such a text-based interface. But anything with media or with a lot of features. So financial services for sure, because they have a lot of features and they have a reason to build their own because it's financial products and they don't necessarily trust sending the data out to somebody else. So that's another area. Healthcare for sure is one that I'm looking at. Those are the three, you know, if I think of media, financial services, healthcare, I think are the three that are going to have the biggest adoption cycle around voice technology over the next year. There's certainly some others that are going to have it. And there's, you know, if you look at smart home, it's sort of already there. So there's some other things that have already been in play, but those are the three that I focus on.
Okay. And what do you think in this terms of the or how do you see the importance of Siri in this context? Because this was also a question from the audience, the adoption of Siri and the growing relevance maybe of shortcuts and things like that.
Well, Siri is one of the reasons why I believe that next year is going to be the bigger year. So there's going to be a couple things that are going on. So right now we have Google App Actions, which for the Android community is a big step up of what Google can do. And for those of you who haven't followed it, essentially you can use Google Assistant not just to open an app, but you can actually deep link into the app, as we would say, and you can actually get to a specific screen or execute a task just from Google Assistant, but the app actually fulfills it for you. And so I think there's a lot of people who will experiment with that this year. I'm expecting Siri to follow a similar pattern this year, but the way Apple rolls things out is it's likely to be announced either in May just before WWDC or at WWDC, their annual developer conference in June, as a new feature available in iOS 15, right, which won't be available till September or October. So which means some people will get early access to it and they'll start building. You'll see some things around the holiday period later this year, but most of that activity won't actually happen until next year. And most likely what Apple will do is they'll start to put some incentives in, and their incentives are based on policy. So they'll start putting in certain policies that incentivize the use of Siri within the app. And they'll do that in part because I think they'll find that there's some advantage there for them to maintain some of that from like Siri presence, as opposed to everyone just building their own custom assistant. At the same time, there's a lot of tools out there right now that are getting increasingly sophisticated and increasingly easier to deploy your own app without Siri. And this is really important because even when you do Siri or you do Google App Actions, you can only do really top level activities. You can go and do one, but once you're in the app, you can't really use it. And I think that's going to be a persistent issue going forward. So people are going to, a lot of app publishers are going to find it beneficial to have their own, at least voice UI, whether there's full assistant functionality in there as opposed to just voice navigation is a different question. But I think a lot of them will start with that voice navigation. And we saw that like this past year, Snapchat did it for finding filters, you know, thousands of filters. It's like a media project or problem, right? Thousands of filters. How do I find the right one quickly? How do I, if it's, particularly if I don't remember the name of the filter or something like that, I can just ask for it and it'll serve up the right thing using natural language. So I expect to see a lot more of that.
Sure. Great. Maybe just one last thing about the look into the near past, so to speak, before we dive into a look into the now and the future, because you are mentioning like when things certain things will kick off next year. So we should definitely have to talk about this year, what would happen this year, not only next year. But what we've seen last year is from as we are looking to the on the platforms like Amazon Alexa or Google Assistant, is that there are at least we felt like there were not that many new things in quantity like the years before. We had, I think, in 2018 or 19, we had like 360 new inventions in Alexa, in the Alexa system for developers, for companies, et cetera, et cetera. But last year, I think there are a few things we have to touch before we move on to the future, talking about the monetization, maybe. That, how do you, or have you seen the monetization in the US and maybe at the global perspective as well? And we can give our two cents as well to the German market here. But we definitely have to touch this point before we can move on, I think, right?
Oh, sure. So monetization on Google or Amazon, so Google Assistant or Amazon Alexa, is a failure. It has not worked so far.
Full stop. That's actually nothing to celebrate, like the sad trombone.
Yeah,
is missing.
Yeah, you need more sound effects, I think. Yeah, I mean, let's just look at the data. I mean, we even saw some internal data leak out of Amazon showing that they were hoping to make $5 million internally on just their cut of it. They didn't even make like $1.5 million. I mean, come on. I mean, this is not, and I think part of it is it's too locked down. They're too reticent to allow people to try different types of monetization. For example, they won't allow tipping. Here's another thing that hasn't been told elsewhere. You can do subscription or you can do in-app purchases, right? You know, one-time purchases. But you can't allow a user to tip a app publisher or creator. Why not? Now, I understand that Amazon Legal has some reasons for this, but it seems fairly foolish to cut that off to see if that might be actually a really good thing. Because there's a lot of people out there who are building really useful skills, but it's not something that makes sense for subscription. And I know there's a couple of players out there who've done pretty well with subscriptions, and they've been able to support game studios with 10, 15 people in them to keep pushing that on. But there's not a lot of those that subscription are really going to work. I think the in-game purchasing, the freemium model, hasn't been explored enough. I know a couple of people that have used that in gaming again, and they're getting as much as $50 per user that purchases, and so that's pretty significant. And they thought that was a better conversion rate than they would get on the subscription side. But let's look at advertising. Let's look at tipping, some other things. And I was really just talking to somebody, I won't say who it was, and I won't say what platform it was, but somebody who's sort of on the inside. And his view is that this won't really take off from a monetization standpoint until there's advertising. Now, I sort of agree with that, because if you look at the web and you look at mobile, it was actually advertising that did it. Because what advertising does is it allows you to have the lowest friction way to generate a little bit of money while you're building critical mass. Anytime you put subscription in front of it, you create friction in getting critical mass. And so if you have a small community, you don't really benefit from word of mouth as much as you would. And so you don't have that multiplier effect. We talk about this. Robert Metcalfe did this with Ethernet. He was sort of the sort of developer of this model or conceptual model back in the 1970s. So I think they really need something that allows less friction in order to get wow. But I will say that I don't think just enabling advertising will do it. My belief is that the apps aren't good enough, that we haven't found enough applications, user experiences that people are just so delighted on that they want to spend a lot of time on, or at least they want to use it every time a certain problem comes up. And that might be because we're thinking too narrowly and just recreating things that already existed, or it might be because the things that we're doing, we're not just doing good enough. I suspect that it's the former problem, that we haven't come up with some of the more creative things. But I will say, like, at the same time, I'll say there are some applications that are doing really well on, you know, on those platforms. Music, really, really well. It's a really true, and people, and here's one thing I'll just say, and we'll get on to the other questions. The secret to the internet was email. Email was turned out to be so important in the 1990s, they built infrastructure that eventually was used to build the web. But without email, it's not clear to me that the web would have been built. And when you think about the web, it was built so that you could publish sort of simple pages, basically digital brochures. And that became popular enough that eventually people laid a lot of fiber optics, so that you had bandwidth, and then something like YouTube could exist. Because YouTube couldn't have existed 10 years earlier just because of the bandwidth constraints. And so what I try to explain to people is you actually only need sometimes one use case to make everything else possible on a platform. And I think music streaming on smart speakers is a very good use case that is, you know, creating this impetus for at least the smart speaker and in-home type of things. Now, do we have that same type of thing on mobile? Do we have that same type of thing in the car? That's a different question. But at least we have a couple of these use cases that create the reason for this thing to exist, that create the reason for hundreds of millions of people to have smart speakers in their homes. And then it creates the opportunity to reach those people with new applications. Uber wouldn't have existed if Angry Birds didn't exist, right? I mean, you know, some of these things, it's like Angry Birds was so popular, it helped drive the growth. And not just that, Facebook too, right? But because so many people were using this, then Uber, with its unique business model, could come in and offer this entirely new value proposition, riding on the back of infrastructure that was built for other use cases.
Yeah, that is true. But what would you say? What was the fiber of voice? If you have a bet, what would that be? What is the accelerator?
Well, I'm just writing about this. So all of you who want to get Voice Insider, I'm putting out a new one today. I think the oversupply of fiber optics made things like the 2000s and the growth of streaming media and a lot of the other applications we saw possible. And we saw this. It was just there was a glut, as we would say, of fiber optic capacity. And then it was just there. Anyone could use it. And so it became very cheap. And then you could do all these other things. And in this market, I actually think that there is an abundance of tooling. You can build a voice app for nothing, $0. You can not only build it, you can deploy it for people to use it for $0, right? Now, you might not want me to tell you that because obviously one thing I left wants to charge very high fees for all of this. But if you look at this, and my analogy here is that back in the 1990s, and I'm showing my age, I was deploying some early business-to-business e-commerce websites and for big brands and things like that. It cost $1 million to deploy the infrastructure to set up a website. You had to set up your own server, right? Yeah. And so, if you were a company, you would set up your own server. You spend $1 million and a couple of Sun servers to handle the traffic so you'd have good performance. That was before you spent money on design and coding and UAT testing across 4 different browsers, all of which were incompatible. You had to build completely different systems. And so these projects... Yeah, I remember when I was at Sapient, I mean, we had a group that would turn people away that didn't have a budget of $5 million. Like, big global brands were coming and were saying, hey, if you don't have $5 million, we can't do this, right? So I'm not saying that it's free to have a good experience, but I am saying that this all the tooling is free, basically. You've got open source tools from Rasa, now Pico Voice is out there, and some others. You've got players... that are Spokestacks doing this, Allen AI. There's a lot of people putting things out there that are close to no cost, at least for the tooling. And then you've got the big platforms. If you want to go Alexa or Google Assistant, they'll not only give you free tools to build, they'll give you free data, free storage, right? At least up to a point. And so the barriers to entry from a supply side are very low. I think the problem in this market is really the demand side. We don't have the apps that are drawing people in, with the exception of this idea of music and weather and a couple other things.
But I think a little bit disagree on your point here. I mean, I don't think that the ecosystem needs more apps that are built on zero or at least zero budget. I think we need more high quality apps that will apply to people's use cases and are really smart and drive the drive attention and retention of by being used a lot of times and not many of the zero budget ones. I mean,
we're not in disagreement. I don't disagree with that. What I was saying was that I've never seen a market, a technology market. So I've been through several, you know, a couple of the big platforms and smaller platforms in between. I haven't seen a platform with this many high quality free tools available to get started. Okay. Right.
Yep.
So the,
that's true.
You're the right. Cost to start is very low. Now the cost to be successful might not be very low. I still think it's less, it has been less than what it required to be successful in mobile apps. Right. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, now, but the problem is like, so the cost to deploy a mobile app was much more expensive in 2010 through 2012 than it is to do a voice app today. And the market was growing faster, but it still wasn't like an overwhelming number of users. I think one of the problems we see today with voice apps is they say, hey, the cost to deploy a voice app is less. And some people think too far less, right? And I don't think it should be. And, you know, Ahmed Bouzid was talking about this 2 years ago. You know, it cost $375,000 on average to launch a mobile app back then. Why are you doing voice apps at less than $375,000 budget, right? You're setting yourselves up for failure. Well, part of that was because when they got it out into the market, there weren't enough users in the end, right? And on the back end to take advantage of it, or, you know, they were cheap and they thought it should be free or whatever. They heard me say that it's cheap, it's free to get started. I don't know. There's all these other reasons. But... Go ahead.
Let's sum it up. Like, it's very, very inexpensive to run voice applications, and all the costs you would have had 20 years ago that you would have to invest into the infrastructure and the tooling and the servers, yeah, and so on, you can now invest into the UX and the design, right? So you could potentially invest into UX and design, and we try to yeah, definitely.
Actually, just one last thing. And if you think about mobile apps or other type of web apps, most of your expense is before and afterwards. Maintenance is very small, and too many voice app projects actually try to follow that same model for voice. Actually, you should. I don't know that you have to spend as much upfront. Maybe you do in terms of design and development, but you certainly need to have a larger proportion of your budget set for post production post deployment, because in this space you actually have to continually improve, and that makes a big difference. I was listening to a thing yesterday where they talked about, I think it was Air New Zealand, their chatbot came out and had like a 7% success rate initially. But they were able to learn and iterate, and they were doing two iterations per week on it. And by the end of the year, it had a 90% success rate in handling customer inquiries. So was that a failure? Well, maybe in the first couple of weeks, but no, not really, because they were getting the learnings. And so then they got it to the 90%, which was their original goal.
Yeah, I think that's, we had in the last event, Kane who said the deployment or launch of a voice project is just the beginning or half of the project. You're half in of the project when you launch your skill. After that, you need to have maintenance and train your model, iterate, have a new version on there, and then have these 90% increases in recognition. And actually, then it can be a success if you after 3 weeks you evaluate your launch. Maybe it's too early. You need to spend more time and seeing how the project is moving and how to improve, for sure. So maybe another topic that we have touched a little bit in the conversation before, and we talked a little bit about the use case or the ecosystem, the car and voice and cars. And I think that's one quite interesting field that we are moving at the moment. We have seen a lot of announcement during the CES of big car manufacturers that are advertising not only house powers in German engineering anymore. They are talking about entertainment, car entertainment, and voice assistants and customer assistants in their cars and marketing these experience. Hyperscreens, yeah, screens are a big point as well. So they are more focusing on these entertainment features and assistants in their cars to have people buy their cars anymore. And so what is your point on the use case? Cars and voice assistant cars, custom assistant cars, Alexa in cars, entertainment cases with voice in cars. So many, many touch points for you. I think that you have more deeper insights and knowledge about it.
Yeah, I think obviously the voice assistant in the car preceded the voice assistant in other places, except for the call center, the customer contact center. This has been around for a long time, although people might say that it was just voice navigation back in the early 2000s. But it's absolutely going to be essential for any luxury brand is going to have this. And I think increasingly it's going to be viewed as essential all the way across the portfolio because consumers are just going to expect it. It is when you have a well-functioning voice assistant in the car, it is a better experience. And I think a lot of people were introduced to this by things like Apple CarPlay, where they could use Siri. They also had the screen that was very similar. And that was an objective lesson to the car manufacturers. If they want to implement their own custom assistant in the car, here are some principles that they could apply. And I think if you look at what Cerence announced just a couple of weeks ago and what they're doing, and Mercedes is the first to deploy several of those features, it's really a tremendous advance from what we've had. And the driving experience used to be about the performance of the car. And more the driving experience is going to be about the experience in the cockpit. And, you know, I think Cerence is doing a nice job along these lines right now of introducing these new features that will just make that driving experience better. And when you talk about this
Could you explain a little bit about the features? Because I think not everybody's well informed about the announcement of Cerence. I think they have a great lineup of stuff they're doing at the moment. So,
Yeah, I'll just list off a few of them, and I recommend people just check out Cerence's YouTube channel because they've got videos of all these things. So first of all, it's the type of services that you can access. So, you know, they actually have this one video where they show Google Assistant, Siri, and Alexa side by side with a Cerence, with a custom Cerence deployment, and they show all these things. They say, well, everybody can start music, everyone can answer a question about the weather. Who can find you parking and reserve your spot automatically? And Cerence is the only one of the three that can do that. Now, maybe you could pull up an app in Apple and do that, but you can't actually just do that at the top level. You have to do something else, and you can just do that much more simply. And so they show a lot of these different applications that just to help you be more efficient in the car in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. But then there's other things as well. So they have Just Talk, which is a wake word-free activation of voice assistants. So you don't actually have to say, hey, Mercedes, in this. Well, hey, Mercedes hasn't implemented this yet, but you won't have to say something like, hey, Mercedes, or hey, BMW, or whatever else the automaker is. You'll just be able to ask a question, and the system is smart enough to understand when the question is directed at something that it can fulfill, or you're asking a question to maybe another passenger, or you're talking on the phone, or something like that. So that's another one. The one they are rolling out is I think it's called Just Look, where there's eye tracking combined with voice assistant.
Impressive. Yes.
Yeah, can identify what you're looking at. Now I saw this demonstrated 2 years ago at CES. Maybe it was 3 years ago. It was a while ago. It was when it was Nuance Automotive before Cerence spun out. And it's nice to see that they sold it back then. It's you know, for the cars that were being designed back then, and now it's there. But you can just look at a point of interest and you could say, what's that? Right. And yeah, it'll tell you, it'll give you information on it. Yeah. And it works. And they've got these other things like tour guides. So like we're all like one of the things that's happened with Airbnb, a lot of people don't know this, is Airbnb's done really well for local rentals, things that are within 3 or 4 hours of people's homes, as opposed to flying. They're not flying places anymore, but they're vacationing locally. And there's this whole other idea of like, okay, so you're going to a new place and you're driving. well, what's a great way to experience a place? Well, they have these tour guide solutions that Cerence has integrated. And I think Mercedes is the first to roll that one out too, where you could just drive and say, hey, I want to do this tour. And you might be in Carmel, California, or you might be in Atlanta, Georgia. And it'll take you through like a 2-hour tour of the city.
So that's an interesting touch point, because now car manufacturers are thinking about content and content creation and how to entertain people while driving, which they haven't been before. They just thought about how to get as fast as possible or maybe as safe as possible from your home to your work. But now they are thinking how people can spend time in a meaningful manner while they are on the daily commute. And this is, I think, transfers a little bit the thinking of car manufacturers that they used to be in the past.
Agreed.
Would you say that this is already relevant this year, 2021? So would you recommend companies, app, voice, UX, enthusiasts, developers, whatever, to like have an eye on that trend or to watch?
I think an eye on the trend is one thing. Yeah, there's no commuting going on right now, so there's fewer drivers. So you have to pick your,
right.
You know, I think this idea of like local excursions and this tour guide concept is a really appropriate one for the time that we live. It's not widely deployed yet, right? Because it takes so long for these features to get incorporated into the cars. Although Cerence is starting now to do over the air updates. So I think this will be able to be more quickly deployed in the future. I suspect that the car is going to be a very robust platform, but given the fact that most people are staying home and looks like they will be most of this year, I'm not sure that this is the year it would break. It seems to me that, like, that's going to be a future year activity. Hey, Tim, okay. There was a question I saw in there about different languages and what countries should do when Amazon or Google is not providing language localization for either their national language or for dialects.
Sure. Yeah, and from Martin. Exactly. Yeah. Let's.
I wanted to answer that. They should build their own.
Sure. Do it.
They should.
Feel free.
These countries should build their own. Estonia's already done this. India's got a solicitation out right now to do one for the government websites. Iceland has, I think it might be a public-private partnership in Iceland that they're doing it. We have Mike, which is a private company, which is doing some of the countries in the Balkans and Greece, Albania. So I wouldn't wait for the big platforms. I mean, it's nice that the big platforms, if you can be connected to them, because they provide all these other services, which is really nice. Connection to your email or to search or, you know, some of these other things. But as I said earlier, the same math applies to governments or regions as does to companies, and that it's much less expensive to build one of these today. You can build your own language model. The tools are there. It's not free. It's not necessarily easy to build it. Like, building a language model might be the hardest thing that you can do in this space, but it's certainly doable. The technology is there. The expertise is there. So go ahead and do it. And why wouldn't you want to do that and not be dependent on whether, you know, a company in Silicon Valley or Seattle says, hey, I'm going to support this. And the other thing about Amazon is, I'll just tell people, and I've been writing about this probably for 3 years now, that if you expect to have an Alexa localized version for your country, you better just see if you have a robust Amazon.com e-commerce presence, because that's where they've done it, where they either have a robust e-commerce presence for Amazon.com or they intend to have one. That's where they build their language models. Everywhere else, they do not. Google's different. Apple's different because they sell smartphones into every country, right? And so they're going to have far more language models, and you're more likely to get support from them just because their business model and objectives are different.
So, but I think that's a good point that, I mean, in these countries, maybe governments should go and push for voice assistants, because they might have a budget and think about accessibility and like drive down their costs in communication to the people. So maybe this is another approach that, or as you mentioned, a public-private partnership with the government that they can apply and roll out a voice assistant that might not be that integrated into daily life, but at least it will understand and can be like the starting point or platform for further development and rollout in these countries that haven't had a voice assistant before. So this could be a solution for them as well.
Yeah, it's in the public interest. I mean, in Germany, you've got Telekom, which has a really capable assistant for Magenta. You've got Amazon and Google. But if you go into Poland, you don't have as many options, for example. You go into Czech Republic, you're not going to have options. You go into many countries in Southeast Asia, you know, you're either waiting for Baidu or Tencent to do it, or maybe Line will do it. Or you can just do your own. And I think it's in the public interest. This is like governments invest in PPE and the development of new vaccines, right?
Yeah. So, Tim, go ahead.
Greg, guys, I'm the timekeeper. I'm the German in this round. So, it's time to like to wrap it up somehow. And I would like to try something. It's very spontaneous, but I would like to try something with you, both of you, is like finishing the conversation by answering one of the questions from the audience. And the first one would go to Dominic, and you can choose between two questions, but I will try with the first one.
Leave the other one to Brett.
Let's see. Will we still develop Alexa skills in Google Actions in 5 years? Or will there be standardized APIs and all 10,000 million voice assistants will be able to handle and deal with these interactions we built or UX we built?
So the first question is, are we still going to be supporting Google and Amazon and their platforms? And the second question is, will we have standard interconnectivity between apps, correct?
Yes, there are two questions in one question, but it's I have a different one for you, Brett. So,
yeah, oh, okay.
What do you think, Dominic?
So, yeah, it is hard to say because it's like 5 years from now. If you think back 5 years from now, we didn't have any voice experience at all besides your car, maybe, but there were no voice assistants around. So, I mean, I think in 5 years, we won't think about Alexa skills and Google Actions anymore. I think we will broadly think about voice applications. And maybe we could think, or an analogy would be that Alexa or Google Assistant, it could be something like a browser that we use today. So we develop a website, and then you can have Mozilla, you can have Chrome or Safari to access this information with your browser. And in the future, I think we will build voice applications, and then we can access them with our Alexa device, with our Google device, any other devices coming up with custom assistants in your car with these devices. So think about these more or less as browsers, and like we as creatives or developers or agencies, we will develop voice experiences, and they can be accessed through different devices in different situations and different ecosystems, and they will kind of integrate within these. So I think that's my bet that what I will be doing in 5 years. It's hard to say, but
Brett, I get a shot. Great. And Brett, you can add something related to the interconnectivity of voice applications, maybe. So you wanted to maybe, you have a thought on that?
Oh, yeah. I have really short questions. So the answer is, to your first question, is yes. And the second question is sort of. So
great.
I believe there's going to be a lot of custom assistants, and that interoperability will be sort of the next phase. Once you get the assistants out there, then getting them to be able to work together is very logical. Whether it's a standardized API or whether there's a third party, which is the facilitator of the connectivity between them, I think is a different question. Because I think a lot of the apps will be built in such a way that it'll be hard. You know, they'll all have APIs, so we'll be able to get it. But standardized APIs is sort of the thing that you said. And I'm not sure we'll have that, but we might have a de facto standard because there will probably be one or two vendors out there who will have the tooling to basically a connection bus, if you think about it, between voice apps.
Great. So now I have the question for you. And that was the question from Dominic, but never mind. So you have to give a guess for who actually asked that question. It's the first to do for you.
I don't know who's here.
You get $100,000. to invest in one company in the voice conversational AI space. Which one would you bet on and why? Who asked that question?
Well, I don't know who's
maybe a company here, that's maybe it's somebody who could be interested that you invest into his company. So Jan Koenig. I help you.
Oh, Jan asked that question. I've been asked that question many times. It's funny. Like, who's the, like someone asked me a couple of years ago, you know, who's the first company to be a unicorn? And I was like, well, you know, SoundHound's last funding round actually put him at $1 billion valuation. But I would say that, like, the company that I think has the most momentum right now is Rasa. And Jan may or may not want to hear that. I think of them as being complementary, but yeah, maybe there's some overlap there. But I think they have the most momentum right now. I don't, if I had $100,000, yeah, I think Rasa would be a good bet. I mean, there's some other things that are really kind of boring out there that are good. I like Verbit; it's doing really, really well. Although with their last valuation, I don't know if I go in it. And then the other one, which is sort of, which I think is voice adjacent. It's like voice helps make it a better solution, but it's not necessarily a voice solution. Is I really like What3Words, because it is the one solution out there that could actually disrupt a very well established, very large space, because it's a completely different model. It doesn't have a lot of the features of Waze or Google, but it actually has a superior location system. And so I think that's also a very, very interesting space, and one that I think is far better with voice than trying to type things in.
Thank you so much. And
Jovo.
So you get $200,000, okay?
And I really do like Jovo's business. I think it's really good. And the other thing about it is I hear a lot of things from people in the industry, and people love Jovo. So the company's doing a lot of things right, because I hear so many good things about it and so many people have standardized on it.
Cool.
Perfect. So we touched many, many questions somehow during the conversation. I hope all of you, the authors of the questions, are happy with the answers we or Brett provided to you. And some of them were picked up during the conversation from my side and at the end. We knew it already. We could talk like and have a chat for hours and hours and hours. But we tried to crunch it down to 1 hour. And we just have an overtime of 5 or 6 minutes right now. That's absolutely fine.
You failed at your timing, like the platform that failed at monetization. So just own up to it.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, I don't have a sad trombone. For the next interview, I will have one, and I will play it right. Would play it right now. Brett, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. The recording of this conversation will be uploaded to YouTube, and it will be restreamed to the All About Voice podcast as well. So you can listen as often as you want to it. We definitely should continue the conversation sometime in the future, maybe in a month or two or three, and let's see how 2021 develops. And yeah, I think for now, we really enjoyed hopping on this conversation with you. You are about to start your day, some sort of, right? So
well, I've been at it for a long time. I'll be on Clubhouse in an hour, 45 minutes, because for a voice lunch, if for those of you who are Clubhousers, we've got voice talks coming up at 2, which is different content than what we talked about today. It's actually just a 10-minute presentation on some trends that I'm looking at. And I'm available. And in fact, I'm going to do some more Clubhouse stuff. Maybe the three of us should get together on a Clubhouse at some point and just have like an open discussion forum. It'd be fun.
That's good.
And All About Voice Clubhouse.
That's true. That's what we need. Set it up.
we will do.
Thank you very much. As you can see, Brett is a really well known and requested for speaker, and is busy with talking with other talking obligations and panels he's on. So thank you very much for joining us today. It was a great honor to have you here for our first Meet the Expert format. And I think it went quite well. You see, there are some glitches because we are not sitting next to each other and everyone is virtual and we have a slight lag of 10 milliseconds, which messes up everything, a good conversation. But I think we did quite well today. So I think that's it for today. Everything here, what we do is All About Voice Club. Tim, what is the next event we are doing here at All About Voice Club?
So today you will get some more bread into your head on Clubhouse and all the other events that are coming up with this very requested rock star. But for the All About Voice Club, we have already the next event in the pipeline, and that's on March 4th, and it's called All About Voice in Cars. So we will be joined by the guys from Mercedes to talk about Hey Mercedes and MBUX, and we will share the link to the registration right now into the chat, and we are very looking forward to see you there, Brett, and you from the audience. So thank you very much for joining us today, and see you in March for the next virtual meetup.
Bye-bye. Read voicebot.ai. Thank you very much.
Yes, do it. Bye.
Bye. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.